Welcome to Nerds Podcast number 701. Big news for comedy fans. Jim Gaffigan has a brand new comedy series on TV Land. It is called, guess what, Kyle?
How I Met Your Family Matters That Are Stepping by Stepping in the Hood.
A.K.A. The Jim Gaffigan Show.
Oh, that's way cleaner.
Inspired by Jim Gaffigan. Yes, it's inspired by Jim Gaffigan's life. Can you just clean that up? Inspired by Jim Gaffigan's life. Balancing fatherhood. He's got five kids. He lives in a two-bedroom New York City apartment.
So they cut it back to only five kids from the 30.
I was Jim, buy a house.
Just
you're doing
all those
fine.
Kids, and then they just live in a giant
shoe. Would you buy a big house for some reason? He lives in a fucking apartment. But it's an amazing cast. Adam Goldberg is on it. Michael Ian Black is on it. Ashley Williams is on it. So if you're a Gaffigan fan, you will absolutely love the show. Premieres Wednesday, July 15th at 10, 9 Central on TV Land. And it's all summer long. So well done, Jim Gaffigan. Congratulations on your show. We adore you. What do you got on the Nerdist Community Corkboard?
I got actually something inspired by the Nerdist. From, remember when you had Cal Penn on?
I do remember when I had Cal Penn on.
The place where we need civil discourse.
Yes.
Some folks in Seattle are doing a show now called And Discuss. And it's going to be a monthly show where they have people on the panel from different points of view doing civil discourse and having conversations about different points of view to try to come to a mutual understanding. The first one's on August 6th at 9 p.m. in the Edmonds Theater near Seattle. I think it's going to be super cool. They are on Twitter at @end_discuss. And I think that they're doing cool work.
Fantastic, Kyle Clark. You're a national treasure.
Thank you.
And by that, I mean the clues to you are hidden on our money. And Nicholas Cage,
I was thinking more like I've turned my body into treasure, ma'am.
What?
And then when you get to the actual treasure by following the clues, it's my butt.
Oh, this treasure's brown. Brown gold.
What if that was just the end of National Treasure, just someone shitting on Nicolas Cage's chest?
That would be a national treasure.
Yeah, I agree.
Mm-hmm.
That instead had to be the ending to Drive Hard.
This episode is Andy Samberg. Second time on the podcast. He was on, I think, in the first...
He
year
was in the
or
first
two,
100.
Super early.
Wasn't the first 100?
Yeah, I think it was like
we recorded it in New York. Such a great guy. And 7 Days in Hell is the tennis movie that he did. It's a comedy. It's not, he didn't do like a serious tennis movie. But it's on HBO Saturday, July 11th at 10 p.m. Kit Harington is also in it. It'll be on HBO Go, HBO Now. I see the billboards for it all over Los Angeles. He's on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. He's going to host the fucking Emmys.
He's like Will Ferrell, where you just look at him and you start to giggle.
Yeah, he's just funny.
Like he just radiates silliness.
He just radiates. But then when you talk to him, he's a totally normal guy.
Total bro. Good dude.
So we had a good time with this this old Andy Samberg here. This old Samberg!
On another episode of This Old Samberg.
This one! Same one!
All right.
Same one as the other episodes. No, same one.
It's a whole episode.
Same guy. Same guy as the other ones.
Produced by David E. Kelly.
This episode was also brought to you by Selfless, which is basically Sir Ben Kingsley. It's a movie. Sir Ben Kingsley. He's an extremely wealthy man. He's dying. He undergoes a radical medic procedure that transfers his consciousness into the body of healthy young stud man Ryan Reynolds.
Oh, the rich don't even die like the rest of us.
No. So that's a goal. We all have to get rich enough so that we can just put our minds in other bodies.
Mm.
Would you want to put your mind in a sexy body?
In Ryan Reynolds' body. Hell yeah.
Yeah. What else would you want to put in Ryan Reynolds'
Most
body?
Most things.
All right. Well, essentially, it's about immortality. But obviously, it's not going to... You made Katie laugh. But obviously, it's probably not going to go as well as they would hope to. Otherwise, it wouldn't be a movie. Ideally, how far would you go to live forever? Selfless stars Ryan Reynolds and censor Ben Kingsley, a Nerds podcast guest, in theaters July 10th. Now here's the Nerdist episode number 701 with Andy Samberg. This old Samberg!
That one.
This one?
Yeah.
Okay.
Good.
This guy?
Yeah.
Katie, the thing.
Now entering Nerdist.com.
It's funny that Mad TV was one of those shows that I, and some part of my brain, I'm like, that show's still on, right? Like, it's one of those shows that was on for
it
so
was on
fucking
for
long.
So long.
Yeah.
Michael McDonald now directs a bunch of Brooklyn Nine-Nines.
Oh, really?
Does he? Yeah. Nice. And he's fucking great.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
I had him as an improv teacher once, and he was really scary as an improv teacher.
I could see that.
Because he understands it so well.
Yeah.
That when you're not, like when you're not doing great work. It's just like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Stop it. Stop trying to control the scene. Like, snapping, you know, and you're like, I'm already scared.
I heard crazier stories about him from a while ago that he was, like, pretty domineering and crazy, and that now he's much more mellow.
Oh, that's good.
But him on set at Brooklyn was like, because he's insanely funny, so, and he turns out to be really good at directing. So the episodes come in really good, but also there's, like, 10 or 12 great new jokes.
Oh, wow.
That he just was like, what if you did this? And then you're like, oh, yeah. What if I did that?
Bob okay. Yeah.
That's a great pitch.
Sure, well, let's do it then.
Yeah.
That's rad.
Yeah, he's great. He was on the podcast a few years ago. He put out a stand-up special. And then just one of those guys that just, like, does everything.
Yeah.
Like, stop doing everything. You don't have to be good at every comedy everything.
You're kind of one to talk.
What? Oh, come on. No, I don't. No, but okay.
Stop doing everything.
Take the compliment. As much as it's not deserved, take the compliment.
You shut your fucking mouth.
As much as he's just trying to be nice, acclimate to the...
No.
You know.
No, we...
the Nerdist Empire. Everyone does
no,
like this.
No, stop. We...
Do I have to be close to this?
Yeah, close-ish.
Okay. You can hold it, too.
You could be like this.
You could be a little Freddie Mercury.
Yo.
You ever notice? You were on the podcast in the early days of the podcast.
Yes.
I think when we were in New York and recorded at that weird apartment studio.
Yes.
Were you guys there for that?
No.
You went rogue.
It was mano a mano.
No, you were there.
I was?
For Neil deGrasse Tyson. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
that was different.
Neil deGrasse Tyson, but that was a different time.
Different time, but same studio.
Oh, okay. I've been in that studio. Sure, yeah, yeah.
And a guy basically turned his three-bedroom
apartment.
Yeah,
an old guy that probably collects antique radios, like, had this yes. fucking studio.
That's
yeah,
like
yeah,
any old guy.
Yeah.
That's all old guys
but
do.
But clearly at some point in his lineage, like, at some point in his family line, like, he got this apartment that's on Central Park. It was, like, it's gorgeous
yeah.
and an uncommonly large apartment for New York. And he just turned half of it into this recording studio, and they do a lot of NPR stuff there.
Oh, wow. It was fun. It doubled... I believe as a Wired magazine article.
It was a Wired magazine yeah. article also as well. Yeah, interesting.
Yeah,
and now you're and so that really launched your career. That really
Wired. Yeah,
but it because I was just thinking about. I feel like maybe one of the first times I met you, I think was at a show, and I was either at. It was either at one of the Channel 101 screenings or like or just a show.
I think it was a stand-up show in Santa Monica.
In Santa Monica.
In the back of that bar.
At Finn McCool's.
Finn McCool's.
Finn McCool's.
And I remember it was a very eventful night for me because it was the first time I met you. And yep. I got to tell you that I knew who you were and I was a fan. And that was exciting for me. And it was also the first time I saw Louis do stand-up
Louis
live.
C.K. did it at the Finn McCool's
and it, too. And it was – I think we've talked about this before, but – it was the first time I'd ever seen him doing stuff about his kids.
Yeah. Mm.
It was like right before he really made that turn into like yeah. the guy who does great stand up about how it sucks to have kids.
Yeah.
And like that was such a new thing at that moment. And then obviously it went well.
Yeah.
Went
that was
well
like, him, yeah. What was that? That was probably like 04 maybe.
Yeah. It had to be. Somewhere, yeah. Cause it was like the
that's
year
when he started
before
doing it. Yeah. Like M-Bar had just started.
And he was starting to do other.
Yeah. Yes.
And to see him in that environment, too, because Finn McCool's... Did you ever do Finn McCool's?
Yeah, once. Yeah.
There was nothing about the setup of that show that should have worked, and the show was always really fun.
Yeah good people came.
Because it was... The bar was square-shaped, and so there, you know, like the actual bar itself took up the center of the space, and then it was just a square perimeter, and they just set the show up like in one piece of the square. So, but the rest of the bar was still active.
Right? Yeah.
And so it shouldn't have worked. But for whatever reason, the show was really fun.
It always felt to me the way people describe doing shows on the road.
Yeah.
Where they're like, and you're just fucking thrown in the corner and everyone's drinking. They don't give a shit. They're throwing quarters at your head. And I was like, oh, we have this in L.A.
Yeah, yeah. Just go to the West Side.
But instead of, yeah. Did you ever do stand-up on the road after that?
I never fully hit the road. Right. I went to the Ice House. That's as far as I went.
Pasadena's the road.
I got the show back east. Where?
Pasadena.
Pasadena's like a road gig. Absolutely.
Yeah. And then after I got on SNL, I would do like college gigs where I'd fly places on the weekend and stuff.
Yeah, but there was just no... I mean, you just didn't really have time at that point, right?
No, I always joke that like... It went so well that I stopped. I got really lucky. But yeah, I didn't have time to write material, so I ended up not doing it.
Did you ever feel like any material that you were writing that was not for SNL was wasting material? Like, I need everything for this show?
100%. If I had any idea that he was even remotely funny to me, I tried to figure out a way to make it into a sketch.
Yeah.
Without a doubt.
But did you have, was there a bin of stuff that didn't make it? You're like, well, I guess I can smush this together and do something else.
Yeah, generally like the dirtiest stuff. But even, I mean, we've got jizz in my pants on the air.
You did.
There wasn't really much.
And dick in a box.
Yeah. There were a few stones left unturned in terms of ideas that we had while working at SNL that didn't end up either on the show or attempted.
A few
to put
dick
on the
related.
Show.
I think one of my favorite things about that phenomenon was that it became a benchmark for essentially creating viral content, and so you'd go in meetings after that with like fucking legitimate network people are like, we want to try to create like a dick in the box phenomenon.
Yeah,
like
yeah.
they were saying dick in a box and jizz in my pants.
Yeah. Yeah.
But from such a clinical standpoint, yeah, of like, this is the type of stuff we want to create.
Working at SNL at the time, the fun part about it after is that people would come in, like legendary people, and they'd know the names of those songs. It'd be like Dan Aykroyd going, jizz in my pants. Very good. Or like Tom Hanks and stuff, you know. All like the sweetest guys. But like, you're looking, from our perspective, we're looking at them like, holy shit, these are just legendary dudes. And they're saying our stupid ass song names back to us. And we're like, man, this must have gone well.
And those song names are Dick in a Box and Jizz in
yeah,
My Pants.
Yeah.
But that's totally, I feel like that's totally the type of stuff they would have, you know, particularly Aykroyd.
Yeah, for sure. It was just they wouldn't have been able to get it on when they were on the show.
Yeah. They just had to sing straight up blues songs.
It's the equivalent.
They had to climb over the hill of cocaine to get to the stage.
Or just put a fish in a blender.
Yeah.
Fisherman. Did you go to the 40th?
I was there, yeah. Were you?
No. Oh, I don't really have any connection to SNL, so I wouldn't have been invited, but it was how was it?
It was very surreal.
Yeah.
It was like, I think probably more crazy famous people in one room than I've ever experienced, and that's including now the Oscars. Thanks, guys. Thank
yeah.
you.
So not this room.
Thanks, everyone. Thanks.
Yeah.
Everything's awesome. Lego movie. Yeah, we performed. And it's not a big deal. Really happy for Common and John Legend. But yeah, I mean, it was like everywhere you look is the most famous person that, especially if you're in comedy, but also like you're like, there's Leonardo DiCaprio, Kanye West, and Jack Nicholson sitting together, and there's George Lucas and Steven Spielberg sitting together, and there's Mick Jagger and Paul McCartney, and I don't think Mick Jagger was there, but
seems like he would have been.
He probably was. If he wasn't there, there was someone there who looked
John
a lot
Lennon
like
was
him.
There.
John Lennon was there.
But it was like, the few times that I've been in situations like that where the A-list celebrity density is so high.
Yeah.
You're like, you can't all be in one room. If the roof caves in, you'll take out 40% of the entertainment industry.
That and your brain just shuts down.
Yeah.
Because there's no one to be excited about because everyone's to be excited about if you're excited about that, which I am.
But it's fun because I think they get excited about each other too.
Right.
Like,
right.
Oh, wow, that's, you know, just like you said, like Aykroyd, oh, I love that sketch.
It definitely like broke off into factions a little bit, like inevitably. And I got seated really nicely from my perspective. I was with like Sarah Silverman and Louie and Zach and people like that.
Yeah.
And I was like, hey, is this how I'm thought of? This is fucking awesome.
It's like a wedding. It's like being at a wedding. You're like, what table am I going
to
be at?
Yeah, exactly. Like, this is, I guess,
Jonah, take
SNL
the seat next to Denitra Vance.
Yeah, exactly. And then, you know, it got to the point where like Fallon did a whole recap of the after party on his show, and it was incredible. It was like Prince on stage with Taylor Swift and Paul McCartney and all these people. And I distinctly remember that happening and feeling annoyed that the music was so loud because I was trying to talk to my friend Matt Murray, who's a writer. I was like, I'm so fucking jaded at this point in the night where I was like, I just want to ask Matt about his baby.
Like,
I haven't, I haven't seen him in a while. Shut up, Paul McCartney.
That's kind of a fun, that's almost like a, hey, I guess I made it when I know that I'm really annoyed that Paul McCartney and Taylor Swift won't keep it the fuck down on stage.
It's like, either that or I really love Matt Murray.
He's that great.
He is that great of a guy.
How is Matt Murray, by the way?
He's good. His kid's great.
Yeah.
Good, you got the information.
I mean, from what you could piece together.
He's writing on Brooklyn now. He's my buddy from SNL.
Oh, that's awesome.
And we, you know, when I first got there, he wrote a ton of stuff with me, and he's a dear friend.
Oh, does it feel like when you go to a show like Brooklyn, which I think – if you went from zero to that was your first show, you'd probably feel like, fuck, this is a lot of work. Right. But I mean, I would imagine once you survive SNL, I think most work things, I would assume, are probably like, oh, yeah, but, you know, it's not a live show every week.
Oh, yeah. And also, there's I'm not writing for myself every week. That's right. The hugest difference. I mean, the writing part was by far the most stressful part of SNL for me, is every week being like, okay, now I have to come up with an entirely new idea. And granted, it was me, Akiva, and Yorma had to come up with one, but still, it's hard every week to come up with something that you actually stand by. And sometimes you don't. But it airs anyway. There were definitely like weeks where we'd be like, please don't air this. And they'd say, it's better than some other stuff that's worse. And that's how the show gets decided.
Please don't air this. SNL has the strangest phenomenon around it. And I've noticed this since the very first cast, where people still watch the show, but if you ask people that, they always go, it's not like it was a few years ago.
Right,
like,
yeah.
Always. Doesn't yeah. matter when you ask them. Yes. It's like, yeah, but it's not like the old, or like,
yeah.
But people were yeah. saying that before.
So no one ever when they were 14.
When will people just admit that they are satisfied with Saturday Night Live in its current form?
There's a few people out there, like, in the internet world now that will be like, just be patient. This is good. It has to be good. It's always been good.
Yeah.
We'll realize it's good in a few years. You see stuff like that written, and I'm like, that's pretty much the right idea.
Yeah. I think the only season they were...
That said, it is not like it was a few years ago. I think we can all agree.
Yeah. All the good people left. You know? What is this B-team now? They had to... Like, people don't understand that, you know... I guess it's sort of like... It's part of what it is to be a Doctor Who fan, is you know, you always for a minute are like, oh, but I loved the... But if you just stick with it and stop being closed-minded, you go, oh, I love this new... Yeah. Oh, and you know, like it's kind of nice to discover new things.
Maybe love the format. Maybe just trust in the format.
Trust in the format, yeah.
Guys, it'll never be like Keenan's third and eighth years on the show.
It's never.
Those are the year two.
Oh, the Valley Peaks of Keenan? Yeah.
I think the only season where we can definitely say... That was the case was the season after, like, the first cast left, and it was that strange... There was this strange cast with, like, I think, like, Charles Rocket and Denny Dillon. And
was
like,
that before Murphy was on?
Yeah. I think he came on at the tail end of that, and then that was the next wave, was the Piscopo-Murphy years.
You can also say it about the Robert Downey Jr. year.
Yes, that was that year, I think.
You can, but Lovitz was in there.
Yeah.
And then also, I mean... Wasn't that like Robert Downey Jr.,
Randy Quaid,
Joan Cusack?
Yeah.
It was like people that were already
Anthony Michael Hall.
All these incredible people. It maybe wasn't like the most renowned year of that show, but it is significant in that it was still a fucking killer cast.
Yeah.
Just maybe not for that
show.
At that moment.
I think Lauren had left, right? He left after the first...
And that was his first year back.
Yeah, so he was gone. He started first 5 years, and then he was 5 years gone.
And it was right? Ebersole, right?
Dick Ebersole.
And then when he came back, that was like the Robert Downey Jr., Randy Quaid.
And the last episode of the season was that the house was burning down, and he takes Lovitz with him.
Yeah.
They literally fired everyone but Lovitz the next year. It's so crazy that they aired that.
It's so
real.
But I think they probably only had... Because I remember Billy Crystal said that they only had a year contract for that. And I always think of... When I think back in the Billy Crystal years, I'm like, yeah, that was a good like three seasons. Like, no, that was one season where you got
Ed
Fernando
Hunters.
And the guys who talk about pain Jackie Rogers Jr. Like, that was all just one fucking season.
It's crazy.
But Jackie Rogers Jr., that was a SCTV character.
It was, which he brought over. Yeah. And so was Ed Grimley.
Yeah, Grimley too, yeah.
But I mean, it's, you know, and then to... And let's just think about all the great Mad TV characters that we love to bring up. I can't remember.
The Asian one.
And then
the little boy.
Yeah.
I don't know. I didn't watch it.
That was Michael McDonald.
That's right.
Yeah.
McDonald's doing.
Which I saw that character at a Groundlings show before it was on Mad TV. And it was legitimately, it fucking slaughtered.
Yeah.
I mean, you can see, it's fun to... Did you ever try to workshop stuff live, or did you just not have time?
I didn't have time. But the people who came in from, like, sketch background, like, if you watch Wigs audition, it has Target Lady and, like, three other characters that she did within the first month on the show.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she and Feral is that way, too. Like, Groundling people come in fully formed.
Right.
Taryn was kind of like that. Maya, you know, it's, and I think Dana Carvey had a ton of stuff like that. Was he Groundlings? I think he was Groundlings.
Was he Groundlings?
Was he? I don't know.
Well, Phil Hartman was, and he, same thing.
Hartman, yeah.
Yeah, he, like, his audition tape is one of the best things to watch. It's incredible.
I've never seen his audition tape.
Print of everything he was going to do on the show.
Yeah, and he just doesn't give a shit.
Yeah.
Like, he's just, he even does a character that smokes the cigarettes, and then he just continues to smoke the cigarette the rest of the time he's on stage.
Well, yeah, because
cigarette tastes good.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was older by the time he came on. He was old, not old, but he was older than everyone, than most other people. Like, yeah. Phil was well into his 30s by the time he went on SNL, right?
Yeah.
So he was, I think at that point, and he also had another career as a graphic designer. So I think he was probably just like, fuck, didn't even, it's the best place to come from if you cannot give a shit, but then sometimes you spend so much time trying not to give a shit that you actually give more of a shit.
Right.
Getting into that sweet spot's a very difficult.
Yeah. The right percentage of not caring.
Yeah, because it's almost like lightning in a weird sense, because you just have to be at a place in your life where you're comfortable with yourself, and it's, you can't engineer that. Yeah, you just have to be comfortable with
it. Turns out self-esteem is a big factor in that. This is a bummer.
Yeah. Or at least just being comfortable in your skin. I don't even think it's an issue of I'm so much funnier than everyone, or I'm so much better. I think it's just an issue of like, I can take this or leave this, or I'm fine. It's not gonna compromise my life if I don't get it. Right. And I think that's what people are drawn to.
I think that the live element speaks to that a lot, because there's, people can smell it if you're scared or if you're not feeling what you're doing in that moment.
Yeah,
you know, it's like good stand-up when people are really like at ease, like Chappelle, who everyone agrees is a genius. Yeah. But like, I've seen him do sets where he goes on for like an hour and a half and mostly just smokes cigarettes.
Yes, he does.
You know what I mean? But and I loved it. Yeah. Where I'm just like, fuck, I could watch this all night. Like, and he, every now and again, will tell an incredible joke, and you're like, there's the joke. Oh, yeah. I love him so much. But like, he has such comfort on stage that I think it's almost more important than the jokes he's doing at some points.
Yeah, because whoever's on stage ultimately is the emotional conductor for the audience. And so if they're comfortable, the audience is going to be comfortable. Yeah. If they're fidgety, the audience is, because the audience wants to surrender their will to the person on stage. That's why they're there.
Yes. And I will say, like, you could argue like, oh, well, Chappelle is such a huge star that he has goodwill, but I used to do stand-up in college, and I'd see him every now and again, and it was before Chappelle's show, and it was the same thing.
Yeah.
He'd, like, just chat up the audience, like, ask people who had weed. And he was a known entity for sure, but it wasn't, like, the way it is now.
Well, yeah. But it doesn't even – but the fame thing doesn't even really matter past, like, 5 minutes.
Yes.
I mean, people – I think people are almost more judgmental of famous people because they expect them to be so much better, and if they're not
– right.
If they don't knock it out of the park, then, you know – then you're asking him to keep it down while you ask your friend Matt Murray about his baby. What were Taylor Swift and Paul McCartney playing?
I'm sure her song.
No. They were like, I think I remember the story. I think she was.
I wear short shorts. You wear long pants.
That classic song.
What's the song where she's like, "I'm the nerdy girl and she's the hot girl"? And you pick. It's the only Taylor Swift song.
All of her songs are just called "Shake It Off."
They're all
Shake It Off. Her songs are slowly starting to like acknowledge the fact that she looks like Christie Brinkley now. Like, there's only so long you can like tell people that you're the nerdy, shy one.
Right.
And you're like, you're literally a model.
Yeah, glasses don't help that much. As a matter of fact, they're kind of hot.
Yeah, they're kind of in.
So let's not.
Yeah.
Let's not pretend. Yeah, it is. I'm just a dorky girl from a small town. No, you're a goddamn billionaire and one of the most statuesque, gorgeous human beings.
Hail from an estate in Pennsylvania.
Yeah, if she was in like a kind of like an 80s teen movie right now where she's the love interest, she'd be walking around with her hair down in a dress, and then she would put on a shitty jacket and put her hair up and put her glasses on, then all the guys would be like, whoa.
Yeah.
That would be the scene.
She'd be carrying her books like with really closed body language.
Yeah.
And then someone would get her to open up.
Yeah. I think you're literally describing one of her videos.
I think I'm describing a lot of the videos. Maybe all of them. Except for the one where she trashes that mansion. That's probably hers.
Guys, take it easy on her, okay?
You see that new Rihanna video?
Yes! Someone sent it to my girlfriend. They're like, this is the most fierce, daring, bold, blah, blah, blah. And we watch them. We're like, okay.
What is it?
It's fine.
I kind of loved it.
Bitch better have my money.
Yeah.
Yeah, and it ends with her in a wheelbarrow full of naked in a wheelbarrow full of cash,
covered in blood.
Covered in blood. Yeah, she basically is like, you know, she fucks people up in the video, and it's fine. It's fine. It's fine. It was just, yeah.
It's visually arresting.
The reviews are in.
Says Andy Samberg of The Arresting
you
Times.
Look at wheelbarrows the same way again.
It is fun, and it is, you know, and I guess, yeah, because I guess she had to put it on Vimeo, right? Because if she's, like, she wouldn't be able to put that on YouTube. Because of content. Like, you can't show boobs on YouTube.
Yeah.
So they should put it on, probably put it on Vimeo.
Or is it Tidal?
I don't know.
I don't understand how Tidal works.
We're not supposed to.
We're not meant to.
We're not allowed to.
We're not meant to.
It's like Tidal.
It's like Bitcoin. It's a thing that a handful of people really understand, and even they don't really understand. It's like quantum physics. It's like, okay, once you think you understand it, you don't understand
it. It's like the Interstellar of music.
It's the Interstellar of music. Yeah, it's 3.5 hours long.
I should take that back because Interstellar was my favorite movie.
It was a good movie.
I loved it.
It was a really good movie.
To see it again.
It was a. Are you going to see it again?
I'm excited to see it again. Yeah.
That's what. It's one of those movies that I felt like by the time I got to the end of it, I was like, I loved it, but I don't think I ever need to see it again. Like, I feel like I logged the experience in my brain.
Did you see it in the theater?
No, I didn't see it in the theater.
I saw it in the theater, and a lot of people I heard complained about the score. There was like, too bombastic, and da-da-da. And for me, it did the thing, which I personally love.
You thought the score was arresting.
I thought it was orally arresting.
Yeah.
It is insanely loud and, like, relentless, but it was in a way where it was like, you know the scene in the second Lord of the Rings where the orc army is so huge that,
yes,
that Wormtongue starts crying?
Yes.
Where it's like he's overwhelmed with how massive and, like, powerful it is. I had that moment in Interstellar where it was, like, not an emotional cry, but, like, a stimulation cry. Like, my senses were so overloaded with the music and, like, what I was seeing when the ship's, like, spinning around trying to dock into that thing. And I started actually, like, rolling tears where I was like, oh, my God, what is happening? This is so much information. But I loved it. Like, I left feeling like, fuck, I really got my money's worth. Because I've never felt that, like, overwhelmed by something.
But Reginald J. Pennybags of the Millionaire Times claims, bombastic. This is bombastic.
Bombastic doesn't have to be bad.
No, but I do think that it's an aggressive sounding term that an old millionaire would use. This is by far the most bombastic score I've ever heard. And that's the problem is that I never, when I have time, I don't ever think I should go to the movie theater. I just think I'm not going to leave my house.
I watch almost everything at home or on a plane now.
Pretty much.
And I think probably I would enjoy some movies more if I went to the theater more often.
Well, of course. Like, there's some movies that you should see Mad Max Fury Road in the theater. Like, you should see Interstellar in a movie theater.
Is Mad Max still in the theaters? I still haven't seen it.
No, I think it's probably gone.
No, I'm sure it's there.
It's still in the theater somewhere?
Somewhere.
You should see it in a theater.
I really want to. Somewhere far out, but
yeah,
it's even more fun.
Oh, you know, Lydia keeps trying to get me to go to a drive-in.
Yeah, there's Santa Fe Springs.
Is it good? Have they upgraded the sound system, or is it just those old, like, drive-through?
No, it goes to your car, bro.
Yeah. It just has that Jag sound system. That's as good as it is.
It's pretty good, man.
And you
rolling a Jag?
Oh, stop it! Cut it out. It's just a...
He got shy
it's
for real.
It's fine, yeah. You know? It's okay. Oh, my God, my neck is sweating. My neck just started sweating.
Well, they got, like, the Bose system in the Jag?
You know, I don't know. It's nice. Whatever it is, it's
Borloff and Olsen?
It's a...
I can't remember.
Bang and Olufsen.
Yeah. It's fine. I don't know what it is. It's nice. I don't.
You got the pull-out stereo, right? You got the MacGruber.
The tape deck.
Yeah. Pop the face off. Put it in your pocket.
Face off. Best. I used to covet those.
Oh, man. Look at that, man.
The, like, pull-out catalog in the Sunday paper.
Yes. Yeah.
Be like, oh, get that pull-off. The face.
So good. Yeah.
I feel one of those Kenwoods, bro.
Kenwood.
But, you know, not even just, like, action movies or big movies like that. Even comedies are better to be seen in a theater.
Oh, yeah, the shared,
like,
experience.
Yeah, that's, like, when I saw What We Do in the Shadows, and I watched it, like, in a theater, and it was great hearing people laugh, and, like, it made it really funny. Then I watched it again with some friends on iTunes, and it was funny to see that, like, the parts they would laugh at instead of, you know, in the theater.
One of my favorite cinematic experiences was when... At Sketchfest a few years ago, they showed Airplane at the Castro, and then the cast and directors were there, and the theater was like 1,000 people. And watching Airplane with 1,000 people
and seeing all the jokes absolutely hold up.
Yeah, because
it's just one of those movies that for so long you just kind of watch it with you or like maybe one of your friends.
Right.
But getting to experience that again with an audience full of people, it was like a whole new movie.
Yeah, all over again.
Did people kind of Rocky Horror it where they would say the lines before or during? Or
no, they didn't. They didn't. But
and don't call me Shirley.
I feel like it'd be hard not to. Yeah, I would be my impulses to ruin it for everybody.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, but it was. I don't know.
I went to see Jaws. They re-released it this summer, and went to a theater.
Black like a doll's eyes.
There were a couple of girls in the theater who had never seen the movie, so their reactions to they were screaming when the shark showed up and stuff like that. And then like whenever Quint and Brody and Hooper would sing, the audience would sing along with it. It was kind of fucking awesome.
Oh, that's pretty great.
I thought it was going to be like
a bad way to see it.
He goes, "We're going to need a bigger boat," and they all went, "Oh, great line! No way!
Oh, yes, he's going to need a bigger boat.
That's a classic line.
That boat ain't big enough. That's just a factually accurate statement.
That was improvised by Roy Scheider." That's what someone probably would yell.
That would be the worst environment to see the movie. This is with a bunch of film nerds who are basically just trying to do their own version of DVD extras while you're trying
to... There's no commentary track for Jaws. Someone's got to record.
I was watching a movie at CineFamily once, and there was a guy behind me, like, every time. It was like this, like, Takashi Miike movie where it's like the guy's like, Got a lot of that going, all right. Like, just to himself out loud. It was the most fucking frustrating experience.
I think the most frustrating experience for me was on Christmas Day several years ago. I took my mom to see Dreamgirls, and there was someone sitting behind me who wasn't just singing along with the music. They were trying to harmonize with all the songs, which made it like 30% more irritating, and they were not doing a good job.
Yeah, I saw a guy once.
Was it Jennifer Hudson?
It was Jennifer.
I'm gonna get it right.
It's like I left some stuff.
I just left it. I left it
undone, and I want
to. I can't control what they cut out, but I can systematically go around and add it to every screening of Dreamgirls.
Have you ever had the experience, the opposite comedy experience I have, where like if I love the movie and everyone's laughing, it makes it more fun. But if it's a movie where I'm not finding things funny, but the audience is going berserk, for jokes I don't like, it makes me unable to enjoy the movie.
Right?
Yeah,
I've had that happen a number of times.
Like, it makes me sad about the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, that's the same when people go. They go, "What do you do? I'm a comic." "Oh, I love comedy. Like, my favorite." And they start listing stuff where you're
Ted,
please.
I can't say the names of anything, obviously, for political reasons.
For sure.
But because you're running for office.
Yeah. Literally political reasons. Running for comptroller.
Running for
No one's
comptroller Sandberg. That'd be funny. And then the Brooklyn Nine-Nine, just your credit is just comptroller Sandberg. I mean, that's a thing that you should do, is just take a low-level political office where you could manage both. But then you just get a weird title.
And it's just for entertainment reasons.
You know who would do that? You know who would 100% do that?
Will Ferrell?
T.J. Miller.
Oh, T.J. Miller.
T.J. Miller would actually be like, "I became comptroller of Echo Park." Like, why?
It would be really hard for him to stay consistent enough in his campaign to win it. At some point, he'd freak out and like spit beer in someone's face and like take a shit on their desk.
Yes, and they would love his moxie for that, of course. And he would get the job.
He'd be like, "I believe he cares."
Yeah.
That would be amazing. I feel like there's got to be some low-level political office we have to run. You just get two people to run against each other. Just get one of your friends and you run against each other and you concoct. That would be so much fun to concoct the most ridiculous campaign with the most ridiculous campaign ads again. Because if your friend was in on it too and you guys were going at each other.
But then if you win, you're fucked.
You don't want to win, so I think maybe the trick is to try
to be as horrible as possible.
So that your friend wins. It's basically like,
did we just sell a movie?
Yeah.
I think we did.
Yeah.
Failing out of office.
Yeah. He thinks he can run this city. He's right. Please vote for him.
Jeff, I know this started as a joke, but I'm just starting to care, you know? Like I think I'm really going to try to win.
That wasn't part of the deal.
You don't know how my kids are looking at me, man. For the first time in my life, they believe in me.
I mean, Rosita's pregnant. She's a person. She needs help. I can make a difference.
Maybe I don't win the election, but I might win back my wife.
Yeah. Oh.
So many layers.
Shit. TJ will do it.
Yeah.
Born in the USA.
We just made a trailer.
We did it.
This is going to be fun.
We just remade the campaign.
Well, so if you can take off August to September,
done.
We would totally shoot this.
Done.
Are you shooting Brooklyn? You must be off now. It's July, right?
We're off now. I just finished shooting the Lonely Island movie.
Nice.
Yeah, very excited.
Holy shit.
Produced by Judd Apatow.
We get it, Judd. Jesus.
You got the French Judd Apatow. Nice.
Yeah,
Judd Apatow.
And Brooklyn comes back end of this month.
Nice.
Starts shooting.
And then the 7 Days in Hell.
7 Days in Hell premieres on the 8th, Wednesday, on HBO Go and HBO Now. It's a new thing they're trying. And then the 11th on HBO proper.
Home box office now.
Thanks for letting me say that.
Of course.
It felt right coming out.
Good push.
Yeah.
Good promotion.
So, Andy, you're doing a tennis movie. Do you play tennis and you're...
Yeah, I'm bad at tennis.
Wait, what?
I am.
Why did you do that documentary then?
Because I love tennis.
Okay.
Funny.
Okay, good.
Kit Harington plays the other guy, Jon Snow.
He's too handsome.
Damon, too handsome.
He's too dreamy.
We had to shave him.
Yeah, you have to shave him down. Take away some of his power.
He played even less tennis than me.
What?
Yeah, he took a lesson the day before we started.
He's one of those British grass courts, though. They fucking...
That's true. And we shot on grass.
Nice.
And by which I mean we smoked reefers.
Yeah.
Okay, so my other movie is these guys grow weed, but they have a tennis facility. And so they grow weed as a tennis court. And
stop talking about it.
It's called Weed Tennis. And the tennis balls are green. And... Steve AG is like the tennis pro
and a fallen tennis pro.
And tennis food is now like hot dogs and stoners and gangster people show up. So now
yeah, sounds good. Yeah. Gangster people.
Gangster
the sequel
people
to Gangster Squad. apparently narrated by Bill Cosby.
It's
one of those horrible riffs that you find yourself in the middle of and no one's jumping into. So you just keep talking like sooner or later some homo's gonna jump on this comedy train and land on some pillows.
Welcome to my world.
Yeah, when riffs go awry. So one guy's just been doing the same riff for like 17 years, and no one's bailing him out.
And then, what if there was a guy?
sitting alone in a graveyard.
Yeah. The oxygen.
And then, Jar Jar Binks was there. No! Please, anyone?
There's been a man.
Grave digger.
There's been a man riffing in these woods for quite some time.
Yes. Are you riffy in life in your home, or do you get serious and quiet?
I get pretty riffy. I'm riffy with my wife.
Yeah,
she's a goof.
Yeah.
Riffy with my bros.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, I'm not like I have friends like Hader and Armisen, guys like that. They like live in a riff.
Yeah.
And delightfully so. But like I definitely get more tired where I sometimes will just sit and stare at the corner or something.
Yeah, because I just wonder, because when you're doing it all day at work,
yeah,
does it just take some of the fun out of when you get home? You're like, I don't want to play a game. I just want to eat. And
no, I still want to goof around when I get home.
Yeah.
I think it feels better than like thinking about the real world.
It's a distraction technique.
Yeah, as it always was.
Are you taking any time off?
I'm taking a week off tomorrow, starting tomorrow.
Okay.
And then I'm back. And I'm doing the Emmys.
Yes, that's right. You're hosting the fucking Emmys.
I know, it's nice. Crazy. So I have to start that.
Are you that's a dumb question.
What?
Ask it.
Am I scared?
Yeah, you're nervous at all.
I am scared a little, yeah.
It's a scary proposition.
It is. It's not like a super hot comedy room either. No. It's like a giant...
Industry people love to laugh in groups.
I mean, it can go... I thought Seth did incredibly well last year.
Yeah.
Had really funny stuff.
Yeah.
And I was there and it played well. But it's not... you can't kill the Emmys.
It's impossible because... What people don't know from watching it at home is that there are pockets of celebrities, and then there's you see people you know,
yeah.
But then there's a bunch of seat fillers,
yeah.
And then there's a bunch of industry people that you don't really know what they do,
yeah.
And the crowd as a whole does not come. It's very rare for them to come together,
right?
You can get pockets of people,
yeah. It's not like I did the Movie Awards a ways back, and. It was like one of those really hot Twilight years.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, I can just talk about Twilight and the crowd's going to go bananas.
Yeah.
And then snuck in some weird comedy underneath that.
Yeah.
Like,
do the same thing for the Emmys.
Just talk about Twilight.
And then sneak in some TV stuff.
Yeah. Notice Twilight was on TV the other day. It's funny about that.
Big musical number.
Yeah.
Are you Team Edward?
I am Team Jacob.
The whole idea is that you thought you were going to be able to host the Emmys the year after you did the MTV Movie Awards.
You just
wrote it all there. Yeah.
I don't think the Emmys would appreciate this, but it could be like you could just come out and sing a song about movies and tell them like that you're being conditioned to host the Oscars, so you're just practicing. So you're using the Emmys as a workshop show for the Oscars.
Write it like you were hosting the Emmys in 1994. All your jokes about like must see TV and how well
we found this like chest in the back room of the Emmy warehouse. You should do that, and you think it's going to be that joke, and then it's just the Ark of the Covenant, and everyone
just melts.
Don't look. Perry Gilpin is in the crowd. It just seems like such.
We have Becker's Ted Danson here. Remember Becker having a great season.
Yeah, the Ben Stiller show breaking molds in television, making the jump from MTV. Where's Andy Dick? Actually, there are enough people.
Yeah.
That you could, like, Odenkirk would be there, so you
yeah.
could...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Right. You could do the, like, nothing's changed joke.
Nothing, yeah. Well, it's just that it's such a strange animal, because if you just came out and did nothing up top, people are like, you didn't do anything.
Right.
But then if you do what people consider too much, they're like, oh, you just did it too much.
Yes.
If you do stuff in between, like, because you didn't keep the show moving. Like, there's just no way to make people happy.
There's so many shows now.
Right.
It's crazy. Like, yeah. I could come out and my monologue could just be listing every show that aired this year, and that would fill the time.
Yeah.
It's great. Plan B.
That's actually not a bad idea.
That's not a bad idea.
Be a real statement.
That's what you're there to do. Make statements.
It would definitely, like, spawn a bunch of did this suck or was it cool?
Yeah.
I think flip it around, like, open with In Memoriam.
That's fucking great.
It's time to look at those we've lost.
Welcome to the Emmys. Let's take a look at them.
Oh, where have you gone?
Straight out the gate. And then, like, towards the end, do a monologue, and everyone's like, "Boo!
Just let us leave!"
Toward the end, after the last award.
Yeah, exactly.
After the last award. All right, that's the best drama.
That's our show, everyone. You ever notice how a madman... People are actually, like, pumping shotguns.
That would be so amazing.
They don't let us drink!
I mean... Well, the weird thing, have you been to the interactive? I mean, to the technical Emmys for the previous week?
Yes, I've been to that.
That one's really funny because people just don't stay in the theater. Like, they go and convene outside, and then they come in, like, an award before theirs, and then they leave again.
Oh, yeah.
So it's this sort of, like, weird, half-empty room where people
and they're really strict about drinking at those, too. Like, we tried to bring flasks, and they confiscated them.
What?
Yeah. I was super bummed.
What did they? Are you sure that wasn't just a dude at the door who?
No, it was for real.
Mm. I was super pissed. You're like, it's the technical Emmys.
Yeah, I was like, please, how do you expect us to sit through this? Like 5 hours long to sit through all this and then not win for best song.
Did they give you the flasks back at all?
No.
What?
Gone forever. It was like,
no!
I had my initials on it and everything. It was like a special flask.
Oh, bummer.
Filled with liquid acid.
Oh, drop. I forgot to mention I'm the acid murderer. Yeah. What?
I was going to dose everyone.
It'd be funny if, like, Robert Durst is somehow out of prison at this point and he can go to the Emmys.
Oh, my God.
Mulaney did a really funny bit about that, about how he thinks Durst should win the Emmy.
Yeah.
It's so funny.
Yeah. He's like, whoever wins for that show won't be Robert Durst, and that's a crime.
He's like, yeah, he killed three people, but somewhere I kind of like him. Yeah. He's charming.
Because he's so, I don't know, he's just so whatever that quality is, and I don't know if it's...
Old Jew.
No.
He acts so innocent.
So innocent.
Yeah, he's really good at acting innocent.
It's like the more...
Well, you know...
But he says things that you would... That kind of makes sense. Oh, well, of course, I must have killed everyone,
right,
because
right,
I would...
Right.
I mean, you're like, was he just confessing that now, or is he... Or
well, is you see, she had the zip code everybody wants, but not the location.
Right.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, that's right. What happened with that? Did Jarecki ever, did they make any sort of a, here's why we released all of the, because it was weird. It was weird for
a
minute.
A little late to be talking about that, I think.
What? You want us to do a fucking monologue about Becker.
1994, yeah. That's different. This is just
a few months ago.
We definitely have to talk about the Jinx.
Yeah.
It was
sure.
one of the big stories for in sure. TV this year, wasn't it?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Certainly on the coasts.
Yeah.
Not so much on the flyovers.
You just focus on the coast. Everything else will sort itself out.
That's the best, like, series finale in the history of television.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
It's so crazy that he did that.
Yes,
he's like, so crazy.
His body rejecting it, just
yeah. And the burping. It's so like, incredible. It you can't amazing. Believe it's happening. Like, I would say more people's faces contorted more for that than Red Wedding.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Where you're like,
sure.
No!
For sure.
I think I out loud was going, no! No way!
You know, at least with Red Wedding, though, it's like, well, you expect... I mean, it was definitely shocking, but in context, you're like, it all makes sense.
Yes.
But nothing about Robert Durst makes sense. Like, well, we have this security footage of you showing up at your brother's place with a backpack, like, the day, you know? So it's just...
He was fully going to keep living his life fine if
absolutely.
He didn't do that.
Yeah.
If he didn't do any number of things, he would be.
Or if he didn't agree to be in the thing.
Sure. If he didn't go out of it, it wasn't even just to agree to it. Like, I think he sort of sought it out.
Yeah, he must have been. It must be that thing of like he wanted to be caught, right?
Yeah.
It had to be. Well, otherwise,
it was
why
either
do
he
do
wanted
that?
To be caught or it was so much.
Wasn't it that he liked the way that Jarecki portrayed him in the fictionalized version movie?
Right.
That he did, that he was like reached out to Jarecki and was like, I really like how you
I just think if you're that far out, if you're that mentally far out, then he must have just assumed that because I don't think it was.
I also love what a throwaway him dismembering that gentleman was.
Such a throwaway.
We're
not
in
here
his life.
To talk about. We know that he cut a guy up and put him in the bags. We know that he went back and fished
but
out
Texas,
the head.
That is not a crime.
No. But that's not the crime we are here to talk about today.
Hey, who hasn't accidentally killed a guy and then chopped him up?
I mean, we all got heads in our backyards that ain't ours. No one ever said, where's the head? No one ever said,
my client is only guilty of not submerging this bag full of parts.
Yeah. My client may be guilty of posing as a woman and murdering a man and putting his body into several pieces. And then vanishing the head, but that's not what this case is about.
You find the head, then we'll talk. But until then.
I'm surprised someone didn't go, I have a question, juror number 7. Can this case be about that? Would that be okay?
That would be also super pertinent, I think.
And it seems like everyone's just like, nope.
Nope. Too late. We already decided.
Whether or not.
Yeah.
So crazy.
We got time. It's hot. It's Texas. We got to get out of here. Do you think you might do something Jinx related?
How if I could get Durst to come do a musical number with me?
Oh my God. That would be amazing.
Sorry, Fred Durst.
Fred Durst.
Fred Durst. Yeah. Robert Durst.
Yeah.
That's funny how he like went out of his way to clarify for everyone they weren't related.
Yeah. I kind of like that move. For the record.
That means it happened enough times in the span of a week that he was like, fuck this.
Yeah. Fred Durst murdered music. He's not in jail.
Okay, that's a fair point. I think that'd be amazing if you could get right. But then it's weird because it's like the comedy side of you wants to do that, but then the other side is like, oh, should we glorify this guy anymore? But it's funny.
It is funny.
If you could get him, I think you should try to get him.
I don't know. He did murder a few people. No.
He might murder people there. You don't know, but...
Hey, good for ratings. Good for ratings.
Yeah. Yeah, so every year they're like, we got to get more serial murderers on the show to really up the ratings. Is it? I just think, are you... How long is the... It's in September this year, right? It was in August last year.
Yeah.
So
on a Monday.
You're going to start in about a week. God damn. I don't even... Where do you start with that?
Ackerman's going to help me.
Nice.
And a lot of Bang Bang writers, so I'm excited for that.
Nice.
And we're just going to get in a room and start throwing ideas
around.
It
starts like this.
What?
Where you just start riffing.
It's like this, except not recorded.
Yeah. And stuff you would actually use.
I think I might use some of this. No joke. Go definitely starting with In Memoriam. That's done. And I'll give you a lower third credit.
I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I appreciate that. Because I definitely want credit for that idea when everyone flips the fuck out.
I didn't know. I swear to God.
Yeah, I don't know. It's a crazy, because do you sort of write for the audience there, but there you kind of can't, right? You really just have to write for the audience at home.
I think so. I mean, a little of both. You don't want it to sound like it's tanking.
Right.
Because we'd always deal with that at SNL too, where you're like, I know this is funny, but it's not super crowd pleasing.
Right.
But then once you're sitting in that room and it's like playing to not a lot of laughs, people at home are like, this isn't funny.
Right.
Even if it maybe they would have thought it was funny with no potential for hearing people laugh.
Yeah.
If there's a potential for it, I think you need to hear it a little bit.
That's why they made laugh tracks. You know, it's the exact they should just have an Emmy laugh track.
But laugh tracks, I feel like laugh tracks have just gotten worse and worse.
They're so bad.
Like, they give me the heebie-jeebies.
You can tell.
You can.
It's they come in too hot, too fast. Yeah. They stay at one level. There's no flow to it. It's just, it's just too jarring.
Did you ever work on a sitcom of any sort? In any capacity? So I worked on Spin City for a while as a PA.
Yeah.
And I've been on other show sets. There's a thing, especially with live sitcoms, where even if a joke's funny, like the writers during rehearsal have that like writer's laugh of like, and it feels like laugh track laughter where it's like they're just blocking a scene or rehearsing a scene, and then like punchline hits and everyone goes, ah!
You know, they do that. I think they do that because
they want the cast to feel good about the jokes.
And also they want the network to not cut the jokes.
Ah.
So the writers, I think they will laugh harder for their own jokes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that the network, you know, so when you get that round of notes post run through at the end of the day, those jokes survive. I think it's just to show the network like, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
Because if there's no noise, it's the same kind of thing.
Yeah,
where
if there's no noise, then it's assumed that it's a dud.
Yeah, exactly. Right. Even though the network people know like, oh, well, there's no audience here. There couldn't possibly be anyone. But, it's, you know, like, or if you do, it's like watching people who, like inexperienced comics do a show where there's almost no one there. And they still get upset like they're bombing when there's only like 8 people in the audience.
Right.
Like, but it's not possible for you. Like, it's not. There's no way for it to be explosive
you
in any way.
You can't hear big laughter.
No.
It's just physically impossible.
No. But especially because you don't know. And for people at home, they also don't know, like, well, how well is the audience mic'd, you know?
Yeah, true.
If the audience isn't mic'd well, then the show's going to sound like a dud. And then you're going to sound like you're full of shit when you're like, no, but if you were there, you would really have.
I have one of those. And I can't even, if I say it, it'll seem like I'm just saying that. But it's true. I did the Harvard speech.
Yeah.
And they didn't mic the audience.
Right.
And it was like, when I walked off the stage, I was like, holy shit, that was just thousands of people laughing. That was cool. And then I watched it back once, and it was like, it sounds like it's just eating shit. I was like, no, it went so well.
It's
like,
Harvard. They weren't smart enough to mic the audience. Yeah, because I've had those shows, too, where I've had a venue record a stand-up set so I can listen back to it.
Yeah.
And
And the show went great, but the only feed was this unidirectional
mic
microphone.
Yeah.
And so the audience in the back is like, like there's nothing. Yeah. And I destroyed it. Like I just deleted it. I'm like, this can't exist anywhere because no one would believe that it actually was a good show.
I should get that Harvard thing and put tons of laughter.
You should get the Harvard thing. You should get the Harvard thing and cut in footage from 90s Def Comedy Jam where dudes are just falling out of the... That'd be amazing. Yeah. Did they publish it somewhere?
Yeah, it's on YouTube.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And did you ever feel the need to defend it and go, no, you guys, you don't even know, I swear to God.
Not until just now. But I caved. I finally caved.
Yeah. The internet's real mad.
It seems like it's far enough removed from it now that it doesn't seem like I'm actually trying to like compensate.
Do you know what's nice, though, is that...
Right, guys?
No, it's fine.
It's all right.
It's all right. I mean, you did steer the whole entire direction of the conversation.
No!
No one even brought up Harvard.
That's yeah, not why I came talking here. About...
No. Andy, yeah. Why do you have Harvard laugh track on your hand?
Well, no! I didn't write that.
It's on your face now.
You've smeared it to wipe the sweat.
No.
But you know what's...
No.
What's great about something like that is that I think the lesson, the takeaway is like... Because as a comic, you can scarcely imagine something worse, where something gets out into the world that that isn't really a fair depiction or an accurate depiction, at least in your mind, of like where you're at. And then you go, oh my God, it's going to be the worst thing. And then it's just like a wave. It just passes over, and then no one really gives a shit anymore.
The cycle right nowadays is 1 to 2 days.
Yeah.
Of anything.
Yeah.
It's crazy. It's so terrifying.
Yeah.
Everyone's going to have like panic attacks and breakdowns because you can't stop now.
It's kind of funny that the furor over the Louis C.K., the last SNL monologue. They did.
Oh, was there furor over it?
Yeah, like it was
the child molester stuff.
It was kind of like a media concocted like outrage and this person need these. And they always do the same. Here it's like 7 screen caps of tweets. Yeah. Not everyone didn't like it though, and then 4 screen caps of people like this is great. But but when we did the Oddball tour last year. And I was talking to him about internet stuff, and he was like, "Yeah, if you just don't go online for a couple of days after something, it's like it didn't happen."
Right.
So I just imagine him in that moment. He probably just like shut off everything for like a few days,
and then I did that when I hosted SNL. I just didn't check for a week.
And it didn't matter.
And like a few people were like, "Hey, people said nice things," and I was like, "It went great."
But that's what, and I think by doing that. The fascinating part is that you really see how much power you have in constructing your reality.
Right.
That if you do populate your world with all the negative stuff, that's what will manifest. And then that just, I think, just becomes like a perpetual self-fulfilling prophecy machine.
Yeah.
But if you just, you know, just kind of do that,
you're like, well, I still have a job.
You still have a job. You're still going to host the Emmys. You're still going to work. You still just made this movie. Like, it doesn't.
Yeah.
It's the things that I think we put up in our head. It's like, that would be the worst. It's like, meh.
Yeah. You're like, yeah, it's pretty good.
It's all right.
Yeah. You're as good as the last thing you did.
Then it's totally fine.
I loved that Louis monologue.
Yeah. It was
like, it felt to me like he was going out of his way to push his boundaries and see what he could or couldn't get away with.
Yeah. And also it was like watching Gandalf like see like how far can I reach this, like how he was taking the responsibility of, you know, there are a few other people who could even get away with even kind of skimming that topic.
Yes.
But what I loved about watching it was how human he was in the moment, because you could tell I just don't think of him as a comic that ever shits his pants on stage about stuff he's going to talk about, and then watch him being like, we're going to get through, you know, it's like him going, and I just ruined my career, you know, like all of that acknowledgement I thought was really great.
But I thought that was part of the bit too. Like, he built that into it, I think, on purpose, because like, it was as much about making people laugh as it was about seeing like, how much do people love me at this point? Like, can I charm my way through this bit about child molesters? Yeah. And the answer was, for the most part, yes, because he's that fucking good at this point.
Well, and also, you know, there are some guys who really feel like it's their responsibility in comedy to push boundaries. You're supposed to push boundaries. You're supposed to talk about things that people are uncomfortable talking about. You know, it's obvious that he doesn't think child molesters are rad.
Of course.
Like, you know, it's not... You know, just saying the words on stage, is it, like, some people just can't even They just immediately shut down. Like, you can't say that. So I think it's important because, you know, it's pushing the boundaries of comedy and not – because this is definitely a time where people are more scared than they've ever been to say things.
Right, right.
To not get completely eviscerated.
Because the feedback system is so immediate.
It's so immediate and it's brutal and it's very unforgiving.
Yeah.
And it really can topple people. If, you know, it really can topple careers. So.
It was especially cool, I thought, just because, you know, having worked there, the monologue is generally a very safe zone.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, let's introduce our hosts to the audience and figure out one or two ways to endear them to everybody. And then we'll go off and have fun with it. Whereas for him, he was like, I've done this a bunch of times. Everyone knows who I am, what I'm about. I'm going to like take this moment in the show and do something super anti.
Yes, but and also in context, though, if it was going to be anyone, it had to be him, or it had to be Chris Rock, or it had to be Chappelle. Yeah. Like, it would have...
Chris Rock did do some crazy.
He did do some crazy.
It was great.
And people were not too pleased with that either. No. But his point was a very human, valid point of like, I'm terrified to go up in the new towers. I'm terrified.
Yeah.
He said to me he was robbed on some street. He was like, I've never been back to that street in 20 years. Like,
right.
It's just part of his human nature. So it's, you know, for anyone to say like, how dare you? It's disrespectful. He's like, no, I'm just, you know, I think if someone's coming at it from a point of view of like, they're trying to exploit something or make someone who's not in a position of power feel bullied or weak. But if it's a question of these are human things that I'm feeling and I'm not the only person and that's an honest, authentic reaction, I think that's fair. I think that's fair game.
I'm with you.
Okay, good. So In Memoriam starts the show. Is there anything else you want to plug or promote while you're here?
No.
What can you say about the Lonely Island movie?
The Lonely Island movie is it's musical in nature.
Okay.
It's like one of those like pop star concert films. That's and my character it's not like pure pop. There's a lot of rapping, obviously, because we don't sing. although there's a little singing.
Okay.
Auto-tune to the rescue.
Perfect.
Nice. That's pretty much the gist of it. It's like the movie we've been talking about making for like 6 years finally made it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Rad. Next June.
Oh, my God. You have to wait a year.
Coming out against Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2.
You know, that obviously, in all fairness, that has an audience, of course. But I think that's good counter-programming for Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
I don't know. I'm pretty conflicted right now.
What?
The smear campaign.
You have a whole weekend.
Right
you
now.
Could.
You're just, they're digging up some dirt on Donatello.
Actually, I think it would be an amazing campaign for the Lonely Island movie if you guys made a rap video about fuck the turtles, like basically
like how much we hate TMT.
Yeah.
Do a parody of Go Ninja Go Ninja Go.
Oh yeah, we should get Vanilla Ice to do a new song about our movie.
He would do it,
talking about how the turtles are
Go Island, Go Island, Go Island, Go.
It should be called Turtles Is Our Bogus.
Turtles Is Our Bogus.
Yeah,
yep. It's gonna bring him back.
You can see these ideas just come to me.
Cut to you and the Emmys. Like, cut to you and the Emmys with Vanilla Ice. Turtles is bogus. Like, what does this have to do with? I don't even know. But is, you know, the other thing about the Emmys is interesting is watching all of the digital media like work its way in and watch. I don't think television's too thrilled with all that stuff.
I'm not sure. I mean, the Emmys themselves, I think, are just like great. Whatever people are excited about, we're going to talk about and address. I mean, I don't know how the networks specifically feel about. You're talking about like Amazon and everything.
Yeah, it's
crazy. It's everyone's like, oh, it's changing. It's completely changed. It's over. Like, if you make a show anywhere, it has a shot of being nominated. For
Will Modern Family break Frasier's record?
Oh, I mean,
they tied it 5 in a row.
Best is that right?
Ever. Yeah. Essentially, it's Chris Lloyd breaking his own record.
Is your show is Brooklyn? Oh, we don't know. The Emmys aren't nominated yet.
I'm guessing it won't be.
Really?
I love it. I mean, we had the incredible year at the Globes.
Yeah.
It's so many shows.
Yeah,
like,
I guess that's true.
How do you break through? Yeah. I don't know. I think Brower will probably get nominated. He's incredible, and they love him.
Yeah.
But hopefully, you never know.
I think it'd be amazing if you got to
present your own award to yourself.
That'd be killer.
As you were hosting the Emmys.
I should go on the record. I would love to be nominated.
I'm not too cool to be nominated. I want to make it very clear.
I mean, we've been on two seasons, and last year we didn't, so I'm going to say we're not going to.
If you don't, you know, if you don't get nominated as the host of the show, you could just create a category and give Brooklyn Nine-Nine an Emmy.
Best Brooklyn Nine-Nine.
Best Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Best comedy set in Brooklyn. Best Brooklyn-based comedy.
Girls could win that.
Shit! And then you lose to Girls. Really funny.
That'd be funny if I try and rig it and then Girls wins.
Then Girls wins. There is Lena. Jesus Christ! Well, thanks for coming to doing the podcast again.
Thanks for having me.
After all these years. Congratulations on everything.
And likewise and ditto.
No, stop.
Let's go to Dupar's, right?
Pancakes, syrup on the bottom, just like Bosch.
You've never said anything of that nature.
I don't even know what he's fucking talking
about. Dupar's.
Where do you guys eat around here? What's your main spot?
Oh, we're in a vast wasteland around Hollywood Center Studios. Yep.
Grub's really good. Grub's right around the corner.
You got the buffalo chicken salad or whatever.
Buffalo chicken salad's really good. The corner is good, right up there on Highland.
Now we're talking.
In Lexington.
Ammo.
We do a lot of ammo at the Lonely Island office.
Oh, really?
Yeah, the rice and chicken. Very healthy.
By the way, every time we start talking about where things are in Los Angeles, people cite the Californian sketch at us.
Oh, really?
And I tried to explain to someone, like, you don't understand. Things are...
No, here's why that sketch works, because that's what people do.
No, it is, because when you live here... There are so many different neighborhoods that gives you context for the thing.
Yeah.
And you spend so much time in your car... That you have to... Don't make that face at me.
People in New York, everyone I know in New York, they like talk about their train routes just as much as people out
here
talk about...
Oh, yeah, take the L train over to the blah, blah, blah.
My favorite thing to do is to try and bait Bill or Fred into talking about directions in L.A. and then going, the Californians, like, fuck you, man. I'm just telling you how to get there. Like,
comedy is truth, brother.
Hey, look, I didn't say it. You did, man.
Well, we're at the end. Enjoy a burrito, everyone. The end.
Now leaving Nerdist.com. Enjoy your burrito.
This episode of the Nerdist Podcast is brought to you by The Jim Gaffigan Show. Premieres Wednesday, July 15th at 10/9 Central, and then all summer long on TV Land.